going on, everybody?
Apologies. A couple of minutes late to the old live stream here. All about that live stream life now versus recording, then doing some pretty minor, honestly, editing, and then sending it out to the world. Like, let's just get it out there. It doesn't have to be beautiful. It was like, is there any podcast you guys really like that's discussing like something as trivial as the NFL? Let's face it, in the grand scheme of things. And I spend my entire, you know, professional life doing this, that you really care that much about production quality beyond the mic, right? If your mic is garbage, then that's a problem. I think my mic's okay. Care about production quality versus just that free flowing atmosphere, getting them takes out there. Just me today to discuss here. I had Benjamin Robinson to discuss post round one, post day one. If you want to go back and listen to that, go ahead and do so. But what I want to talk to you about today, and, you know, if anyone wants to drop any comments in the old drop, I'll just do my normal thing and I'll talk out loud here as I type in. So drop Q&A here in the comments on YouTube. Get on that YouTube. Get on that Unexpected Points YouTube if you're not already, whoever's listening here. I'm going to go over my process for grading the draft. I'm not putting actual letter grades here. Maybe I should, to make it more digestible for the normal NFL crowd, the Pavlov's dog of NFL fans who, you know, need the grade bell to come running immediately to come get those results. I'm ranking the teams by how much they gained or lost in value. And the reason I can do that is because I have exact numbers. Are they correct? No, they're not correct numbers. Again, models. All of them are wrong. Some of them are useful. What I hope is it's useful. I think generally, and I've done some back testing on this, not enough, quite honestly. I think generally, if you look at how teams perform on these metrics by value gained, it'll give you some idea of how much like total value they're going to bring in via the draft over the course of several years. So I like to have a concrete number, and I think this is important, or at least to have concrete evidence. You can have logical evidence. Like, I've been listening to a lot of stuff recently about different philosophers and other things. You know, philosophy might be the analytics of the mind. Actually, that doesn't really make sense, but you know what I mean. I think it might be, there's definitely a logical sort of thinking. Now, can it be convoluted? Can it be interspersed and conflated with rhetoric a little bit too much versus just numbers? Sure. But guess what? We have some charlatans out there who are doing numbers-based stuff that looks pretty bad too. Quote-unquote analytics that looks pretty bad too. So being able to decipher between a good logical argument, even in something like philosophy, being able to decipher between a good numbers-based analysis and analytics, not totally separate from each other. A little bit more concrete, a little bit more tangible in one area versus another, but not totally against each other. So you can have philosophical points, I think, on the draft and how teams have done and ideas behind that I can get behind. It doesn't have to be all numbers. I'm doing a fully numbers-based analysis. I'll incorporate some of my feelings about the other stuff, but I will start, as I start most of the time, and why I'm probably disliked, to say the least, by certain people in the draft industrial complex, is I'll say that most draft grades out there, though, are horrible. I'm with you. NFL pundits, talk radio heads, whoever else who wants to get on there and be like, man, these draft grades, you can't grade draft grades are horrible, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're probably right, but I think you're right for the wrong reasons, because if you're also saying the problem with draft grades is that you have to wait years after the fact, look at the results, and then regrade the draft. No. That's not correct. We have to grade decisions based upon what you know at the time of the decision, or what you should reasonably know at that time. Or if we gain more knowledge into what we could have known at that time. You can also incorporate that a little bit into what we would have done. Yeah. So I wrote a kind of a primer on this, and I thought it was pretty good. Let me bring it up for anyone who's here we go. Anyone who's in the old live stream here, so you can see it on the screen. From Inspected Points, this is from the Substack. Subscribe to the Substack, please, from last year. And I entitled it, Instant Draft Grades Are Mostly Bad, But Waiting Years for Results is Even Worse. So in my typical fashion, I'm saying this is bad. Other people are even worse. Probably not the nicest way of going about things, but hey, the truth hurts sometimes. So here's the problem. Why are draft grades mostly bad? Let's stick with that one. We kind of get why waiting for results is worse. I think most people intuitively get that, especially people who listen to this podcast or watching this live stream on YouTube. We grade decisions. We don't grade results at the end, which has a healthy dosage of luck thrown in there. So why are draft grades mostly bad? Well, the problem is they're not entirely based upon where players are drafted versus the graders' pre-draft rankings, but mostly based upon that. For the large part, let's face it, your biggest names in the draft game are those who are doing the pre-draft rankings. They're not going to turn back and say, you know what, I guess I got all those rankings wrong. Nothing to say here about player evaluation anymore. Close up shop here, go home. Not going to have anything to say about how these teams actually drafted. No, they're going to look at their rankings and they're going to say, okay, this player was taken 20 picks after where my ranking was, so that's an A. This player was taken 20 picks before where my ranking was early, and that's an F because of that, or B and D, or C plus versus C minus, however you want to do the range of outcomes there. Now, most drafters are also bad and they grade too high. There's like not a pretty uniform distribution between at least A and D, and then even throwing in an F sometimes there. Evan Silva is probably the best there at being harsh on some of the grading. So the reason this is wrong is because the NFL has information that we do not have. Material information that we do not have. They also have the ability to really dig deep with multiple scouts on these prospects. So their tape watching is going to probably be superior, but that's only a marginal difference. The big difference is injury information they have that we don't have, character / reference information they have that we don't have, knowledge from different sources as to on an insider basis of what's floating through the NFL, what people may have to tracking data. This is another thing. And talk about analytics. This is stuff I don't have, right? We got some pretty janky sort of numbers coming out from college. That's really like, okay, this quarterback was good. That quarterback was good. Every quarterback was good. We can chart some of their accuracy. And it's really hard to figure out how that really translates going forward to the NFL. Well, they have a lot more data they can go through and try to figure these things out. In particular, when it comes to like the non-quarterback positions, how quickly they get off the line, preciseness on different routes, how fast they're getting in and out of their breaks, things like that can be measured that we can't measure. So they have more information than we do. So in reality, the NFL draft is grading the public media big boards more so than vice versa. The media thinks they're grading the NFL draft. The NFL draft and NFL teams are really grading the media and saying a lot of the time when there's a big differential, the media is wrong versus the NFL. Now, there are some confounding factors here. One of them being that, yeah, if a player is taken earlier by the NFL than on a consensus big board, they are going to get more opportunities. They are going to put up more production because of that. So because that's the case, it's not that the NFL was better at evaluating. It's just the fact that they picked them earlier than confounded with you know, them actually being better, which one is it? Them having more production. So that's possible. So there, it's not like as the NFL draft, NFL teams aren't that much better than big boards in figuring out how much like cumulative value and aggregate value these players are going to have over a number of years. But they're normally better on an efficiency basis too, from what I've looked at. So the NFL is just better, straight up. So that's number one. So that's like a big problem with how most draft grades are done. Number two is, even if we factor in what we do know about selections going earlier or later than consensus, and it's totally asymmetrical based upon the historical evidence. In other words, steals are not really a thing, but reaching is a thing. So if a player is taken really, really early, and this matches with our logic, is you only need one team to make a mistake in that circumstance. And they have found that those players underperform their draft position. Players who are taken early, I mean, late, excuse me, who have fallen, fallers, steals, the ones that, you know, Howie Roseman is trading up for to get every draft so that every media analyst has to give the Eagles an A every year, is contractually obligated to do so because of where their picks are versus their big board. Those don't really seem to be a thing. Very marginal, because if you're getting a pick 20 picks later than where they should have gone, that means 19 other teams have decided to pass on that player. That is real information. You need 19 teams to make a mistake, presuming that all teams kind of need whatever that position is in some form. At least half of them need whatever that position is in some form. You need a lot of lots and lots and lots of mistakes for a team to have a steal. You only need one mistake for a team to have a reach. Pretty easy logic, right? When you're thinking about that. And that's why it's not a case. So if you're going to look at like the value added, let's look at value loss. So every pick early you're taking a player, there's a value loss. There's a big value loss. Let's say if you're 20 picks early, it scales down. And then once you get to zero, it's kind of just flat from there out. That's why it's asymmetrical. You're not getting a big benefit getting him 10 picks later versus zero, but you are getting a loss if you take them 10 picks early versus zero. Asymmetrical in that sort of way. So that's the first thing that you have to understand when you're grading, right? That we shouldn't give like a lot of praise. We should actually be more confident in our negative assessments than in our positive assessments. Another problem though with the grades is they're not very comprehensive. I think some graders are starting to take advantage of looking at positional value, right? But when you compare positional value, as I've measured it, by looking at the surplus value you can expect from different positions drafted at different places in the draft over the course of their rookie contracts, and that's how I'm going to look at it, the positional value you're gaining from certain positions versus others, so that opportunity cost, is way bigger than saying, oh, I'm reaching for a player 15 picks early or something like that. It's massive differences when we talk about positional value versus reaching and steals. So again, most draft grades concentrate on the reaching and steals, when the reality is the positional value has a much bigger effect, which plays into some draft grades, but not a lot, and probably not nearly as much as the reaches and steals. And then the third factor is trading. Trading, I think some people will factor that into their grading a little bit, but how much are they really factoring it in? There's a bunch of little trades that are going on. Again, like the Eagles, when they trade up for a Cooper DeJean or someone like that, a player who has fallen, you know, my estimation would say, okay, decent positional value, getting a cornerback in that sort of area, so that's fine. It's not a reach. So again, I'm not giving credit for steal, but you get credit for not being a reach versus other teams, right? If you're going to net that out to zero, it can't be everyone's negative. So you're getting credit for not being a reach, but then you're losing value for making that trade up. Most people just kind of ignore probably that trade up as part of the equation. They say, hey, they're getting this player who's a steal, so it's fine. We're not even going to think about the trades, or all the trades kind of blend into each other. We're talking about dozens of trades that are made during the course of the NFL draft. How many people are really compiling exactly what you're gaining and losing on all these different trades by the estimations? Well, I'm doing that. So congrats to you listening in here, because I am doing that for you. So those are the three factors that come together. But again, trade value, positional value, much bigger differences than selection, what I call selection value, or the steals and reaches. And even then, it's only half. It's only really half of the equation. It's either reaching or not reaching. That's what you get credit for. You don't get credit for the steals nearly as much. Okay. All that being said, let me take some of the questions here and then I'll move on to the rest. Otherwise, I'll lose everything here. Actually, you know what? No, let me get into some of these grades. Ranks, I should say. I know the grades are not really grades. So let's start with trade value. Why not? Because it's kind of the easiest thing, again, the most oft ignored part of the trade, of the discussion. Now, the interesting thing here, and this is when we have to ask ourselves, I think, pretty seriously, is Kwesi Udofa-Mensah, the analytics GM, the former head of analytics at the San Francisco 49ers, and then came over to the Browns and is now with the Vikings. Do we need to cancel him? I used to cancel people on this podcast until everyone was getting too upset about it. Because we're talking about a $50 million surplus value loss in trades for the Vikings. And I'm counting their trade up when they first move up to get to 23. Then they go from 23 to 17 to draft Dallas Turner. That's like a massive, massive negative because you don't even get the positional value there. They also move from 11 to 10. And believe it or not, you know, these first round trades have a big difference, have a big value losses or gains. Like most of the value losses or gains for some of these teams are really these first or early second round trades. So there's a $50 million loss for the Vikings. The second team, when it comes to the highest loss, is $22 million. So the Vikings are more than twice as big of a loss when it comes to the surplus value on these trades. And the second team is the Detroit Lions. Detroit Lions, you're on my radar for a while now. I'm not canceling Brad Holmes or anything, but he's been getting a little cocky with their results. And, you know, obviously they hit on Penei Sewell. They hit on Amon-Ra St. Brown. Now they're going to have to pay those guys. Jack Campbell wasn't bad last year, but hey, you guys are kind of thumbing your nose in the face of analytics here. I don't know if I like it here. So they took a big loss there. The Rams were next with about $21 million loss. I mean, the Rams, they hate draft picks, future draft picks in particular. So, you know, they had to trade away their second round pick next year to move up, of course. I mean, they got Braden Fisk, who's a decent player, like good positional value, but it doesn't do enough to negate that sort of thing. And then everyone else is under $10 million lost for any of the teams that are negative. So not a big deal other than that. Now, on the positive side of things, Philly is plus almost $23 million as number one. So not nearly as high as the negative of minus 50 for Minnesota for the Vikings, but they made a number of trades up and down. So this is interesting when it comes to the Eagles and how you think about it, because I'm kind of thinking out loud a little bit here. But I've heard some people say for the Eagles, well, you criticize when they trade up, like the Cooper DeJean trade, when they think they're getting the best player and everyone, you know, think they're getting a player who fall and everyone loves it, just like they loved it when they done it for Andre Dillard and others that didn't quite work out in the past. Are we being too harsh on them for that? Because they are making other trades that are producing value. And in fact, overall, they're gaining the most value. I'm sympathetic to that argument, but at the same point in time, I guess I don't view one good trade, one bad trade that equal out to zero as being the same as no trades, because sometimes you don't have a good trade offer. Sometimes, like, moving down is something that's not totally in your control, but moving up is something that's totally in your control. So in my, like, process-based view, and again, it's not reflected in the numbers here. The numbers are going to view them equally. In my process-based view, like, you could have just not that many opportunities to trade down because teams are not willing to give up anything to the particular spots that you happen to be in. So that's bad. Whereas going up, if you're willing to pay enough, you can always go up. Other than, you know, a top 10 pick where someone's really locked in on a player, or maybe even a first round pick if someone else is really locked in on a player. But then you could go to the next spot down. You know, if the Lions couldn't get up and trade with the Jaguars because they were locked in on a wide receiver, they get the next pick, and then they take the cornerback there, which they did in the first round. So you can almost always get up. So that, because it's more under your control, I guess, even if those net out is being equal, I would say it's not great to have traded up. So Philly, you know, it's good, but again, not great that they traded up along the way, even if they get the biggest surplus value in general. The Jags are number two, and that's all based on the back of one trade. They gained $22 million. The Cowboys, all based on the back of one trade, $13.4 million. Then Buffalo, Arizona, the Jets. So Joe Douglas is actually, you know, not on my radar for once. $11 million there. And then the Colts, always Chris, I mean, I was about to say Chris Dillard. Chris Ballard always loved to go down. So he's there. So that's how I'm looking at those sorts of things for trade value. Again, often just completely excluded when we're talking about the analysis here. The second part is positional value. Now, this is a little bit difficult. Now, I in my analysis, I give credit for quarterback picks, but I understand that quarterback picks, like you can't, it's hard to say, oh, the Bears get all this praise for drafting a quarterback, which is a lot of surplus value, and like they need a quarterback, right? And if the Chiefs, although they don't, if they happen to have an earlier pick and they don't draft a quarterback, like obviously they don't need to draft a quarterback, so we don't need to really worry about it there. At the same point in time, I'm just going to look at it in that sort of way. I'm going to look at it in a way, again, all models are wrong, some are useful. I'm going to look at it in a way where I'm going to say, all right, well, let's go ahead and view them kind of on an equal playing field, and especially concentrate on what happens outside of the quarterback. So is it taking the tackles, the pass rushers in the first round? Is it taking the cornerbacks in the mid-second round? Is it taking the wide receivers in the mid-second round? Is it waiting to take tight ends until later? Is it not taking running backs at all in my model? Now, and this is an interesting thing. Like, my model actually dings people for taking running backs even on day three. And the reason is, and I kind of agree with this, I could get how you could say, oh, a fourth round pick, you're drafting a running back, like, who cares? Yeah, it's like a low upside type of pick anyway. Well, the thing is, it's not a low upside pick. It's a low probability hit pick. But there are wide receivers who hit in the fourth round. You know, Amon St. Brown or someone like that. There are pass rushers. There are tackles. There are others who hit. So the thing is, if you just focus on the contingency as if this hits, what sort of value do we get on an extremely tiny rookie salary? We're talking about you're paying like a million and a half a year or something like that, a million a year. What bleeds into the averages that go into these calculations is the fact that those are monster hits. So yeah, like it's not likely that drafting a running back instead of drafting a cornerback in the fourth round or a wide receiver in the fourth round is really going to hurt your team. Like, it's not likely, but every now and again, it will hurt your team. And when it does hurt your team, it's massively hurting your team because the running back pick in that round does not have the upside that those other positions have. Again, we're trying to skew the odds in our favor. It's not that we can never arrange the draft in a way that we're guaranteed to get great players, that we're guaranteed to win games, that we're guaranteed to go into the Hall of Fame as the best GM ever at the end of our day. Can't guarantee all those things. You can make a bunch of decisions, try to skew the odds in your favor. If you have enough decisions, those in enough of a timeline, those values that you're adding, those expected values that you're adding are going to eventually kind of overwhelm what's likely in terms of good or bad luck. But, you know, I take the luck first. Like, if you could give me good luck and slightly bad decisions, I would rather have that than slightly good decisions and bad luck. The first scenario is going to end up with a better team than the second scenario, but we can't control the luck portion. So we do what we can do there. So if we're going to look at these different teams and what they add in terms of positional surplus, the number one team is actually the Minnesota Vikings. So getting that quarterback, hey, ends up helping out in that range, even if they get about $37 million in positional surplus here, but they burns, let's remember, over $50 million in trade. So, you know, it hedges somewhat. Now, again, you're going to have quarterbacks in a lot of these different picks. You're going to have the Atlanta Falcons at about $30 million. You're actually going to have the Saints. The Saints get a decent amount of value even drafting Spencer Rattler in the fifth round. And I just want to talk about the quarterbacks really quickly. Like, why are quarterbacks not going any earlier? What's wrong with these teams? Teams, like, super – they overvalue, like, we need to fill these three needs in the draft now that free agency is over. We have three picks. We have a third. We have a second, a third, and a fourth round pick. We got to use those picks on our three needs, even though we know that these are all kind of coin flips or worse. So, like, the probability of hitting all three is extremely low. You're probably still going to have needs left over. Maybe you should be doubling up on one position versus another, this and that. I mean, two-thirds of the NFL could really use a cheap quarterback, either as a backup or a developmental guy who could end up being great. I mean, who knows for Spencer Rattler? You never know. Probably not, but you never know. So the fact that there was such a, like, if you look at the distribution of draft capital spent on quarterback, there's just absolutely no chance that the 2024 NFL draft class was, I was about to say five, it's six quarterbacks, isn't it? Six quarterbacks. It's kind of insane. Six quarterbacks who are so great. They're all in the top 12 picks. Then just nothing. And then, oh yeah, there's like Rattler and a couple of other guys at the end who have very little chance of being good. And these other guys are really, really good. There's no way that that is a correct approximation of the distribution of talent of the draft class. There's no other position where that's the case, right? People are just way, way, way too focused on quarterback and saying, we have that box checked. We have our backup box checked. Because again, free agency's already happened. We spent a lot of money on our free agent backup relative to like how many snaps they're estimated to play, which in the ideal scenario is zero, right? You don't want your backup playing at all. So we got our starter, we got our backup. We don't even have room on this roster really for a developmental quarterback. So we're just not going to take them. And then it's like the musical chairs thing. Once the musical chair is gone, then they just keep on, then they just go all the way to the fifth round before the next guy is taken. Obviously way, way, way too long. So the Saints get some benefit there. And we keep on going quarterbacks for these benefits here. Washington, New England, Chicago, and so on for these different ones. You know what? Let me make an adjustment here. This is something I probably should have done earlier. Let me take out quarterbacks, right? Let's take out quarterbacks because this will be a fun thing to look at. And then say, okay, who's getting the most positional value if you don't include the quarterbacks? And it's actually the Cincinnati Bengals are number one here if you do not include quarterbacks as part of the equation. They took a tackle in the first round. They took an interior defender in the second round. They took a wide receiver in the third round. They took an interior defender in the fourth round. Bang, 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 bang. They took a tight end in the fourth round. No, actually, it was third round. Sorry. Okay. The second interior defender was also the third round. And then the fourth round, they took a tight end, which is actually like the sweet spot, probably overestimated, honestly, as a sweet spot because of the fact that Kelsey had done so well and the Kittles of the world had done so well before. But still, they take their there. They get another tight end later. Tanner McLaughlin, who I like a lot, who kind of hit some metrics for me. They basically had no bad picks by these metrics. Yeah, at the very, very, very end, they're taking your safeties and your centers, which are kind of look bad all the time whenever you take them. But they actually don't look bad here. So they're the team that comes up as being the best. And teams that get knocked for this, and I mentioned the running back thing, like teams that are on the bottom. Let's look at the teams that are on the bottom here. So the worst team is the Tampa Bay Bucks, and then the New York Giants are next on there. So like, let's look at the Bucks. We can walk through kind of why they're seen as being so negative. So we have the running back pick. You know, you look at it, you say, oh, they're taking Bucky Irving here. I don't know who Bucky Irving is, honestly. Apologies to fantasy football world, but I've not been keeping close tabs on that. We took Bucky in the fourth round here. Why is that such a negative? Well, you're not going to hit any upside on this. Might be a useful guy, but you could replace that with a UDFA. You could replace that with a cheap free agent, probably. And even if he does hit, you're probably not getting the upside. It's a little harsh, but I'm sorry. Life is harsh. They took a center in the first round. Sorry, that's not going to fly. And then similar to running back, they took a safety in the third round. Now, I know you might be saying, oh, the 89th overall pick, taking a safety, like, what's the big deal? Well, again, you have to kind of think about this as safeties being cheap. So there's a cheap element too, but there's also like a portfolio of players that you have. And how do you team build around that? If you can get safety in free agency and a pretty good, like solid starting quality safety in free agency, yeah, drafting one in the third round may not have a lot of downside to it. They could have some upside to it, but you're using it on a position that you could have filled in free agency where you literally can't fill high-end tackle. You can't fill high-end pass rusher. You can't really fill high-end wide receiver without having to trade away something or overpay someone like Calvin Ridley in order to do it. It's just, like, I know it seems very ideological to say you don't take one. Sure, they'll hit sometimes, but you have a limited number of picks. You know, if you had, if the number of picks you had was not limited, sure, throw it. Like, if you had 7 third-round picks, throw one of them at a safety, throw two of them at a safety. But you don't. You only have one. You only have 7 picks in the entire NFL draft. It becomes an issue there. So those are the teams who end up getting hit based upon that analysis. And if you look at reaches versus steals, and again, steals are not really a thing, who does the best in that regard? Let me pull her up. Kansas City Chiefs, actually the best in that regard. Congratulations, Chiefs. And who do they end up getting? Do they end up getting someone a lot earlier than you would have thought? I pulled up the wrong thing here. Let's see. For the Chiefs, and the Chiefs kind of had a boring draft. I mean, they traded up a little bit. They shouldn't have. Not great positional value. Oh, so they got a tackle at 63. Kingsley Suamataya. No, I butchered that. They got a tackle there who was consensus 42. So they didn't really reach there. They reached slightly in the first round, but not that much. They didn't really reach later. But then again, they got the safety a little bit later, which is going to hurt them a bit. So that's how I'm looking at it. Go on the site. All the numbers are there. Peruse through them. If you have any questions about any particular guys, let me know. Let me see about the safety in the 6. Sorry, people are asking questions here. Well, we'll get to the questions. All right. So I'm going to want to talk about Penix, I think, a bit more. But before that, let me go through some of these questions and throw some more in there if you have it. And then I'll talk about Penix a bit. Okay, Q&A. Seahawks fan here. The Seahawks took a defensive tackle at pick 16. They said that they had 4 opportunities to trade back from that pick. Is it not just as bad as actually trading up? That is an interesting question. I have to think about it because, like, logically, you'd think the opportunity cost is just as high not trading back as it would be for trading up, right? Well, what I will give them in this scenario is the pass rushing in particular, but defensive interior player, defensive tackle player, is a strong round one value player. Who they get? Byron Murphy, right? So if part of the calculation was, we're sitting here at 16, we know we can get this tackle. If we trade down, and I don't know where they would trade down. Let's say the Vikings were one of those choices because the Vikings traded into 17 right below them. So they say, okay, well, if we trade down with the Vikings instead of the Jaguars, and we go down to 23, now are we out of the market for edge rusher or tackle or interior defender? Are we out of the market for those 3 big positions which are going to provide us enough positional value differential that it might even overwhelm the trade value? I don't think it will. I think the trade value is still going to be higher, but it might mitigate it, right? Whereas the Jaguars said, you know, we're going to move down because we want to get a wide receiver. And we know there are going to be a bunch of wide receivers down here. Seahawks not quite in the same position. So that would be my answer for why it's not obviously as bad in that circumstance, because you're maybe if you're playing the positional value game, and again, they could also have like individual evaluations on these players that I don't know about, but I can only talk about what I know about. And I'm not going to be overconfidently talking about evaluations as most people are, primarily for the fact that I don't do evaluations. So that would be it. That would be a mitigating circumstance where I wouldn't ding them as much as trading up. Not trading back would not be as bad as trading up for me. Grade the teams by the process. Only time can tell. Yep, I agree with you there. Draft punters before round six, ? Baltimore, Tampa, and Chicago took punters in round four in 2022 and 2024. Sharper overconfidence in punter evaluations. Eric Eager with an article as well describing more certainty. You know, I have to read Eric's article. I haven't read it. So I could be swayed on this. I guess I would have a low confidence position of like, why, you know, why draft them? Maybe though. I definitely know kickers. So punters over kickers I can give you, because I think punting is something we can measure better. It's more replicable what they do. If you can punt the ball long, you can punt the ball long. You can put a lot of hang time on it. You can put a lot of hang time on it. That's something where it's almost like running a sprint or something. Like once you've done it, it's locked in. There's not a lot of variance to what you're going to do in the future. You're not all of a sudden going to start not being able to punt it long because of that. So it has like a measurable characteristic to it that we don't have with kickers, where kickers, what's more important than being able to kick it long, because kicking it long is like table stakes, right? You got to be able to make a 50-yard field goal, is being accurate. And we just don't have a great way of measuring it. We don't have a great way on how the psychology may affect kickers once they start being bad or good in the NFL. And we just have a much, much bigger sample of kickers who are currently in the NFL to judge them on, that we should probably be looking at picking up on the cheap because they miss a few field goals and the team cuts them, than looking at a college kicker who's kicking from different hash marks and just doesn't have nearly the sample. It doesn't have the sample, and it's an uncertain sample versus a punter. So I could get on board with punters. I kind of just classify punters as like, I'm not giving you credit for drafting them, but I could get on board with that. And I think primarily because the activity of punting is, we can measure it very, very well, and it's a stable trait. So once you have those two things, then even if it's a lower value benefit you're getting from this punter, because it's more translatable and you can be more certain in the benefit that you're getting, that can counteract some of that. So I might be team punter. I might be team punter with Eric Eager. Is there anything predictive to future success from this? I don't know what that's talking about, so we're going to move on. The Seahawks said they had four offers for pick 16. Okay, we already did that. What do you think about draft curves being fit on data from seasons with more preseason training, whose decline seems to be hurting O-line development across the league? I don't know. I have no clue. This is one of those things where I guess as a heuristic, like a logical heuristic, which is not based on any sort of data or anything like that, people just love to bitch, right? And one of the things people like to bitch about is not having enough practice time, not having enough development time. Oh, you can't develop nowadays. Oh, you can't do this nowadays. I mean, maybe that's true, but I remember them saying, like, but they didn't have the preseason and the COVID season, like, oh, this is going to be such a mess. And then offenses just came out and were completely firing. So it actually ended up being, maybe it affected the defenses more than the offenses. We just have trouble measuring these things. Clearly, if we had like no preseason training, then that would have a big effect, right? But when we have these marginal differences, I would just be hesitant to attribute anything major to these things other than a shaving the odds in certain directions. And that probably wouldn't affect my decision making unless it was a very much like an ambivalent kind of coin toss type of decision here. Late, but I hope you're dunking on the media lauding KC for fleecing Buffalo by trading up. Yeah, I tweeted about this a bit on draft night. I was interested to see who Buffalo was going to go for. I mean, they eventually ended up getting a receiver. So in some ways, like your overconfident draft guy might say, like, oh, you know, you should have taken your guy. What if you lost your guy? We don't know if they lost their guy or not. I mean, I like any team that's saying in a tier of receivers, I'll just take whoever comes to me. You know, with obviously I'm doing the work, I'm doing the analytics, I'm doing the interviewing, I'm doing the testing, I'm doing the medicals, I'm doing all that stuff. But if I have like a bunch of guys I'm ambivalent to, then trading back a couple of times is fine. And if you're telling me like Xavier Worthy was that important for of a player, then why didn't someone else draft him? Oh, well, they have Pat Mahomes. I mean, a lot of guys can throw the ball far. I also think there's maybe some, at least in the short term, some overlap between what Worthy and Marquise Brown are going to do. And, you know, Pat Mahomes was MVP when he didn't have that deep threat. So I think I did hit on this in the last podcast, but I'll do that. I'll hit on that again. Let's see. How much capital have the Dolphins spent on running backs the last two drafts? They traded up for, I can't even remember. Is it A-Chain? I remember he pronounced his name now. Last year, and then they did the same for Wright this year. I mean, yeah, it's not great. Let me look to see how much capital they lost on this year's trade. I'm not going to pull up last year's trade because I don't have it in front of me. But let's look, because we have a trade. I have a trade-by-trade basis. I can look at these. So, surplus gained or lost. God, Minnesota. They're all near the top here. So, Miami, 2 million lost on this one, I think, unless I'm missing one here. So, not too bad. Yeah, it's just the 2 million. Yeah, whatever. It's a pretty marginal trade. Not that big of a deal. I guess they may also have some unique abilities here of wanting these super fast guys, which doesn't really translate through as much to the overall numbers. Again, you make adjustments for that, but you know, on average, you want to stick with the numbers. What's the summer's project? Goat series was excellent. Yeah, so last year I did the QB Goat series where I kind of quantify people's careers. Probably update that. I don't really know. I'll take some suggestions though. If anyone has a good summer project that I'm going to be doing, other than trying to get more reacquainted with the classic philosophical texts that I'm going to be looking at, unrelated to my work here. Okay, Q&A. Bears Sphere has lauded polls for not having many late picks because this draft wasn't deep. Is there any way to analytically verify that? I don't know what analytics say, but I love the punter pick. Yeah, I talked punter, so we already did punter talk. I think we've hit our threshold for punter talk here. I'm down. I'm down for punter picks, just on a logical basis without even having any numbers on it. The draft not being deep, I don't know. Like, we're talking about 257 picks in this draft. I have trouble imagining that any particular draft, especially a draft which still has some dudes in there who are from, like, COVID, right? We still have some guys who have extra years because of COVID. So probably, if anything, it expanded the draft pool versus your normal year would be like, oh, you know, there's only 200 good guys here versus not. And, you know, 40% of NFL snaps, roughly 40% of NFL snaps every year. Now, these aren't necessarily high value snaps. These aren't, you know, necessarily all pro snaps, but 40% of NFL snaps, 35-40% are UDFAs every single season. So if that many good players are coming from UDFAs, I have trouble imagining, or that many useful guys. Now, that you're taking a lot of shots at UDFA. So of course, like, UDFAs are going to be more valuable than seventh round picks because each team is only picking once in the seventh round, or with a compensatory pick, you know, 1.1 time on average, versus they can just spam UDFAs. But still, there's obviously quality players there. It's about finding those players. It's a very tiny chance of finding those players, and maybe a tinier chance than in previous years. But it would be, at least my opinion, kind of just right off the top would be, it's probably kind of bullshit, the idea that there's no more. Like, it's overstated. Like, it's, who cares if there's a slightly different talent pool? It's the seventh round pick. You're not going to be a major difference versus previous years. Did I miss a discussion about the Panthers draft? I wanted to vomit every time they made a pick. Okay. Yeah, trading for a running back is pretty vomit-inducing. I'll give you that. Tight end. No, you know, I don't really – I'm not gonna bang on them too much about the tight end, I think. Where was it? Jatavion Sanders. You know, it's weird. He was like the number two tight end behind Brock Bowers, and then he ended up falling – all the way until, I guess, the first pick of the fourth round. I mean, he actually looks pretty good by these metrics, again, because you've had the Kelce and Kittles and other guys hitting in that sort of range in the past. Probably not going to replicate that going forward, but I guess I don't care that much about that. But yeah, trading up for running back is really vomit-inducing, is right. I think it might be the worst pick. Okay, this is a good exercise. So worst positional value pick. It was. Okay, so yeah, Jonathan Brooks. The worst positional value pick in the draft. So congratulations, Panthers. Yeah, you continue to stun us all. I'm sure you guys all saw this David Tepper thing where he came in and like took off the guy's hat inside the restaurant, which had a sign up that said, "Let the coach and GM make the picks." What's wrong with this dude? And I get it. Afterwards, they say, oh, he wasn't that upset. He was joking around. But like, it's clearly I see what you guys are doing type of intimidation move for a freaking billionaire to come in there and be like, hey, I see your sign outside. Ha, ha, ha. Very funny. You know, like, this guy, get some thicker skin, bro. You know, like, I'll take over. Of course, I would probably just like have to go into hiding because I would probably be too wrapped up in everything that's going on, too. So it's easy for me to say, but. You know, a couple billion, 2 billion, give me 2 billion. And I can grow. I can like have thicker skin, like physically grafted onto me. Safety in the six. Yeah. I mean, whatever. You heard my safety talk. It's fine. What are your thoughts on the Steelers going all in on the O-line overhaul? Is building up the trenches overkill or a savvy zig against the league going towards more 7v7? I mean, is the league going towards more 7v7? I guess. I mean, I guess there's more wide receivers on the field, but even then, it's pretty much flattened out over the last few years. And yeah, I think building up in the trenches, the one reason that it could be good and you find some excess surplus value on those guys, not only in the first round, but in a lot of different rounds. Although the Steelers got the center, though, didn't they? People love this center so much that they drafted. He was like, he's like a gym rat, big character guy. Coaches love him. Toughest guy in the draft. People were Zach Frazier. People were loving him so much. But I actually had this being not that bad of a pick. Yeah, the tackle, center, wide receiver, linebacker, guard. I mean, they didn't, you know, it's not bad. I mean, I think what's good about these guys is they have long careers, at least, especially at tackle and center. You could probably get that in free agency, so that could be better. But centers at least end up sticking with the teams and lasting a very long time, more often than others. Same thing for guards. So, whatever. I'm not against it. I'm not against it, but, you know, I'm not, like, thrilled by it either. How do you adjust your curves for later round running backs with the new kickoff rule? Again, that's something where... I'll know infinitely more as I see what the effects end up being on there. I realize we have the XFL as some sample on there. But are running backs even better than having a wide receiver doing these things? I mean, if the impacts aren't as high, right, that would actually open up, in my opinion, this is just me thinking out loud here, that would open up smaller players taking back these kicks because they don't have as high of an impact when they're getting hit. So you would want to maximize like speed and just pure flat out speed versus size. So maybe you could skew towards more, you know, wide receiver types doing this, cornerback types doing this sort of work than running backs. I don't know. Just thinking out loud. Punt returner types doing it versus kick returner types who are normally running backs. Okay, two questions about sort of minor things. Just interested how you'd adjust your prior. Okay, that's talking about earlier questions here. This is a good point here. It was saying Xavier Worthy was probably there at 32. Yeah, I mean, that's also another thing to think about when it comes to the Chiefs is like every trade up you have to think, well, what's the possibility we could have gotten this same exact player? Presuming we have special knowledge, which we probably don't, about this player being better than others. Like, what's the probability we could have just stood pat and gotten the same exact player? I mean, not insignificant. That has to be part of the formula. Number one, you should be fairly indifferent or ambivalent between the different choices in that sort of range. And number two, you might be trading up for no reason. So those two factors together. Q&A. Do you think it'd be worth it to factor in the available players at a specific team's pick for your draft grades? Obviously, that's a lot of work to do hypothetically. Yeah, I mean, it might be worth it. Carter Forbes, you want to join the Unexpected Points team? You can help me out on that. But yeah, I think it could be worth something. You definitely would want to do this if it wasn't just a one-man operation who's, you know, not going to kill myself working on this overnight for everything here. I could probably do a lot more work there. But we could also make mental adjustments on these things, right? That's the beauty of having these numbers is we have the numbers and we have a sense of the effect sizes of these things. We have some sort of sense of the effect sizes of these things. Then we start to have an intuition. You know, most of this I could kind of do on intuition at this point. I don't even need the numbers. The numbers help. The numbers clarify. The numbers give you confidence. But most of these things, you start to learn more and more about it. You can have intuition. You can have intuition even how to guess how much of an effect something may have. And then you iterate on that. So yeah, that would be helpful. But again, I wouldn't like look at the numbers strictly 100% also when I'm doing this. But I want to lean very, very heavily towards them. What do you think about how old a lot of prospects are? Doesn't seem like a ton of underclassmen in the draft. How much of a detriment is that to draft older prospects? You know, it's tough to say. I know it used to be much more of a thing, but I think teams have become hip to it. So maybe that's part of the discussion that when they're saying Ryan Poles on an earlier question, Ryan Poles saying that the draft is not that deep. So there's like extra players in the draft, but they're old. So it all depends on how you're going to like apply your models to it. For instance, if we look at wide receiver, which is something I've modeled a lot, there's still a pretty big premium associated with being a early declare, which kind of means younger, right? Most of the time. But that signal has gone down over time because I think teams have become more aware of the fact that if you're comparing a Kevin White, who's a senior, versus an Amari Cooper, who's a very young junior, an early declare, you know, maybe we're not doing an apples to apples comparison here. Now, Cooper still went first, but the fact that they were even in the same breath kind of shows you maybe the lack of respect for that type of metric that was in the past. I think teams are catching up. Teams are catching up in that regard. More kickoff talk. I can't. Sorry, Trevor. I love you, but I can only do so much kickoff talk here. We've developed our ideas of positional value for several years now. Are there close, explicit, historical, current examples in the commentary on the fit of these models in terms of drafting? I don't know if I quite understand the question, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm using some of these old numbers. I guess one of the risks, and this is something you'd want to look at, is like how does it change over time, specifically when we're talking about and then testing it. Yeah, it's just really, really hard to figure out. I think the missing piece when we're really talking about this stuff, the missing piece when we're really talking about like applying the models is some of the stuff that was mentioned earlier of what are your team needs, even though team needs are overvalued as far as checking boxes. I think they're probably undervalued in terms of not having the box checked. So like, I think if you already have a good tackle, and an older good tackle, maybe taking one in the first round is okay. But like if you have absolutely nothing at a certain position, that should probably factor in pretty high. So again, it's like an asymmetric sort of thing there. You can't be naked at a position going into the NFL season, especially a high value position, because free agency is over. So maybe there's something more to that. And there's probably something more to just updating the numbers with how things have gone over the last several years and whether we're seeing any shifts in the NFL with what's going on. It's like such a low sample size thing that we want you, or you're always weighing more sample versus less relevant sample. Not versus, but you're bringing in more sample, but then you're also getting less relevant sample. Is that worth it or not? I think it is for the most part. Almost all the time you see that with like whenever you split up stats for a particular player, it's always better to have the bigger sample of stats, even if they're less applicable to or contextual to a certain circumstance that you're trying to measure. But you know, it's all things to work through. One last thing on the Penix thing. I just want to hit this one more time because I'm getting a lot of questions here. My overarching point when it comes to Penix, and I think people listening to this are probably pretty smart on this, so I don't need to hammer it too hard. But I just, it goes back to my thing of, I think a lot of people's arguments fall apart when they question something, particularly when they question something that it's not seen as being a typical thing that NFL teams do. They just assume it's not going to work or it's wrong without really asking the question why, right? Like when Ben Baldwin says, oh, all these different teams have traded up or have doubled down on quarterback when they had one, whether it was for Mahomes or for Hurts or for Dak Prescott or for all these guys. Like, it could be a good idea to do that, right? And then people say, well, all these circumstances are different. Okay, well, if all these circumstances are different, then like, why is Mahomes at 10 okay, but then Penix at 8 is not okay? Why is the 20s okay, but 8 is not okay? You can say, well, the fourth round is okay, but 8 is not okay. These are obviously big differences. Yeah, but we have examples of it being done much earlier. And if you hit, right, if we're talking about the contingency of hitting and you have a better chance of hitting on that quarterback at 8 versus the fourth round, then maybe 8's actually better than the fourth round in those sort of circumstances. So it's just like, can we just think these things through a little bit before we bring up, well, it's the number 8 pick, so I don't like it. Well, then what pick would you like it? Most people don't have an answer for that. They're just like, not this, because teams don't do this. Like, what's the tipping point? How are you measuring this? You say he's 24 years old. I don't like it. Well, why? What is practically bad about him being 24 years old? If you're saying it's a bad evaluation because he's 24 years old, well, yeah, that's a whole different question, right? Then Bo Nix is in that category too. Then Joe Burrow, to a degree, was in that category too when he came out. I don't think it's that simple. There used to be more signal in age than there is now. But if we're saying that we're going to have 12 years of a franchise quarterback versus 14 years of a franchise quarterback, if they hit, and that's all we really care about, right? If they hit, that's not really practically a big enough difference to make it obvious yes or obvious no, or an obvious no, at least for most people's circumstances. And also this idea that, you know, free agency is before the draft. So you didn't know. Like, I get it. If you knew everything in advance, that you would make different moves. So I would say, just take the degree of confidence down. And I think some people have had some interesting points where they say, well, shouldn't you have a better rationale and a more solid rationale for liking something than disliking something? Yeah, I mean, in a do no harm sort of manner, that's true. But that says you have equal amounts of confidence. My real take is, you know, I don't think for sure this is a bad trade, and it could be a good trade. Other people are saying 100% certain this is a bad trade. Well, that kind of puts the burden more on them to prove that they're correct than for me to prove that I'm correct, even though I'm going to do more work than they're going to do probably to try to actually have evidence for this, because I'm showing uncertainty and they're showing total certainty. So it's that sort of thing. Anyway, I would just suggest, don't be scared of something that hasn't been done before. Don't reflexively argue against something that hasn't been done before. Don't say, oh, two quarterbacks on the roster, you can't do that. And then you're like, oh, by the way, we've had, you know, Young and Montana. We've had Favre and Rodgers. We've had Mahomes and Alex Smith. We've had Aikman and Walsh. We've had all these different guys where it ends up being more of a media story than a real story. Quarterbacks have been competing in college. Quarterbacks have been competing in high school. There's just a lot of things that are taken as fact because they're these kind of tropes and narratives that we bought into. And there's a lot of things that are, we just have such a strong default towards rejecting things that haven't been done before. I just suggest everyone, let's think about it. Let's think about the, you know, the different scenarios. Let's think about the ins and outs. Let's think about the degree of effect for these different things before spouting off an opinion. Anyway. Appreciate everyone tuning in. I'll try to get some guests going on here, have some more follow-ups if we get some news in the incoming weeks. I find the summer to be a good time to have to work with my schedule and guest schedule for having them on here. Shoot me any suggestions if you have anyone that you want me to bring on for the podcast. I might do some soccer talk again this offseason. But until the next one, thanks everyone for tuning in and for the questions and everything like that. I'll talk to you next time.